gives me great pleasure to introduce the first of tonight's speakers, Liz Scarlett.
Hi, I'm Scarlett. I'm an addict. I'm really nervous. I've never been to this meeting before, and it's huge. I don't know anyone, and I actually called my sponsor before I came. I was like, they all fucking hate me, and I get fear, and the fear is not just, I know it's that death is a possibility, that it's just the overwhelming fear. And I'm an addict, and it's in everything I do. I didn't actually know I was an addict till I stopped using drugs and came into NA. And then I realised I'm an addict through and through, and it permeates everything I do. And I like to change the way I feel, and ideally I don't want to feel anything, or I want to feel great, I want to feel euphoria. And it's life isn't like that. Accepting life on life's terms is hard. And I woke up this morning and I didn't feel good enough, whatever enough is, I wasn't it at all, and I was just like, I can't believe I've got to do this, but I did a few things to help. I prayed, I said the step 3 prayer, the step 7 prayer, I called my sponsor, I texted another addict, and I actually bumped into someone from the rooms on my way here, and I was like, hi, I'm really nervous, but yeah, I just... As a kid, I was obsessive compulsive. Like, I remember reading an article about obsessive compulsive disorder and taking it to my mum being like, I think this is me. She was like, don't be so ridiculous. It was always counting and rituals and all this stuff to kind of make me feel safe. And the first thing I kind of picked up on was when I was 12. And it was a cigarette. And I remember my auntie smoked. She was at our house. My mum didn't smoke. And I just remember manipulating the whole situation. They were all going out. And I remember saying, no, I'm ill. I've got to stay at home alone. Just doing this whole thing, even though my cousins were there who I never saw, so that I could be on my own and smoke this cigarette. And I smoked it outside and it was raining. And then I remember hiding the pyjamas I smoked it in. And it was all very, I don't know, I guess, looking back now, it's just manipulative and doing what I had to do to get what I wanted. And really my using took off when I was 16. And it was bad straight away. It was blackouts, passing out, waking up in weird places. Just, it was automatically not good. But I kept going. I also developed a huge eating disorder. And I just say that because I've sat in meetings and it's nice to get identification. And I still get shame. I get shame just now saying that, but it's fine. It's another way to numb myself, to not feel my feelings. Which is why when I came into the rooms, it was like the thawing out process was extremely painful. And I don't really think I want to go into all the war stories. I think we've all got them. That's why we're here. And I'm not going to try and glamorise it. But I've reached my rock bottom on the 17th of December 2010. And my clean date is the 1st of February 2011, and that's because I just tried a couple more times just to really make sure it wasn't working, because it just, they stopped working, and that's what scared me. It wasn't that there was an intervention or I got sent to treatment. I didn't go to treatment. It was that my drugs of choice just didn't work, and they'd gone from being using with friends while I was going out to just kind of cutting out the going out bit, cutting out the middleman, and just doing it. And eventually my ideal weekend was just Easter weekend before I came into the rooms, was just me alone for 4 days with 5 grams of my drug of choice and just a book and a computer so I could listen to music. And that was perfect. That was perfect. And that's just the kind of the madness. But eventually, as I said, it stopped working. I was going to say fate, but what I see now is my higher power. I just moved in with a girl I used to use with. She was 6 months clean, and she took me to my first meeting, and I just stayed in. I hated myself so much. I was so broken and uncomfortable and unhappy. And everything, every method I'd used, every ritual to kind of make myself feel better, to cope with life, to cope with what I was doing, and this tangled web of mess and chaos, it was just, I was defeated, basically. And I was completely powerless, and I came in and I saw people that were kind of clean and shiny and happy, and they kept trying to look at me in the eyes, and I just didn't want that, and they kept hugging me, which made me really uncomfortable. I've got a friend, she said the first time she met me she tried to hug me, and I just kind of like recoiled, because I didn't feel good enough to be touched. I didn't feel clean. I felt dirty, and I felt I really wanted to be hugged, but I didn't. It was painful. It was it kind of gets me emotional thinking about it. But and I got a sponsor, and people kept saying, "Get a sponsor. Do you have a sponsor?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll just see how this goes." But I did get a sponsor, but I was very, very wary because I felt like I wasn't perfect, and I didn't want some other woman who was an addict who wasn't perfect telling me what to do. But really, a sponsor is not your mother or your best friend or your teacher or someone that's going to tell you off. A sponsor, I heard it described perfectly. A sponsor is someone that is happy, that is comfortable with themselves and has done the steps. And that is what I found in my sponsor. I remember sitting next to her in a meeting and just being so drawn to her, just the way she sat with her hands on her lap, everything. And what it is that she was comfortable with herself. And she just had, I guess, dignity and class. I mean, that's not even a word I use, but that is what she had. And I think those things were so foreign because of how I thought of myself. And the friendships, they're not friendships, the kind of acquaintances you get by the end of your using just to enable using. And she took me through the steps really slowly. She kind of could see that I wanted to be better immediately. And she took me through the steps really slowly. 1, 2, and 3. It's really important you do a solid 1, 2, and 3 to recognise that you're powerless, to look at all the consequences of my using and to think, okay, either I did those because I'm a bad person or because I'm powerless. And once I take the first drug, I can't stop. And once I take it, I don't know what's going to happen. And that's another big thing. I had a huge sense of shame. I felt like I'd gotten this position because I was weak and I was lazy and I didn't try hard enough and I was bad. But you're not, if you're in this room, you're not a bad person, you're a sick person, and you're here to get well. And this is the best way to get well, in my experience. Looking at the insanity, step 2, I've been looking at that recently, it's still very applicable. And step 3, handing it over. What I've learned about step 3 recently is that it's not just saying the step 3 prayer and then hoping that some kind of angel will come down and sort out your mess. It's kind of, you take the right action and let go of the result. And then step 4 and 5, and before I even started doing the steps, I just kept hearing about 4 and 5, 4 and 5 and 4. I was raised Catholic, so I've got all this guilt. And 4 just seemed like this thing where you just listed all the shameful stuff you've done and then you get redemption. I don't know, something like that. But you do list this. I did tell my sponsor the shameful stuff I'd done, but it was also what comes out is the repetitive, almost boringly repetitive patterns of I have this character defect which makes me see scenarios in a certain way, so I act out in that way. And it was just the same thing over and over again. And so then in 6 and 7, you're able to identify the character defects and then you humbly ask them to be removed, and recognising that you don't want some of them to be removed because they kind of enable you to keep acting in the way you've been acting. It's, you've got to admit that, I don't know, self-righteous anger, it's, I don't know, all that kind of stuff, it can be attractive because you don't want to let go, and it's scary letting go of the old behaviour. I thought I'd come in and I'd stop using, but if you stick around long enough, this stuff will just wash over you and you end up using it in your outside life. Stuff that wouldn't even make me flinch before when I was using, I now feel really uncomfortable with. And then 8 and 9, make a list of people and become willing to make amends. The hardest one for that was my family, because of various things I felt. Very angry, furious, just this rage, especially towards my mother, at things that I felt she should have protected me from, things that I shouldn't have been expected to do because I was the child, and I held her to a higher standard because she was my mother. And really, I think if I deserve forgiveness, then so does she. And that's nice, is that I don't have that rage anymore against her. And I'm still on step 9, and it's, for me, it's not a pick and mix program. I pray every day. I go to a meeting pretty much every day because they help me. If I'm manic or if I'm feeling very low, they kind of level me out and try and help a newcomer. I have 2 service commitments, all these things. It seems like a lot, and it kind of is, but the effort I put into my using was huge. It dominated everything, and everything I have in my life today that is good is because I'm in NA. And the fact that I'm here tonight, I was nervous about coming, but I get to be I'm of service, I'm of use. The fact that someone thinks I can be of use is amazing, because I was of no use to anyone, definitely not myself. So if you're struggling and if you think maybe this isn't for you, just stay and just wait and just stick around, because it's the best thing I've ever done, and it's given me a second chance at a life, which is, I'm not saying if I went back out I'd die within weeks, but it's like there'd be a glass ceiling, and I know I could only, if I went out, the best thing that could happen to me is that I'd come back in, because here, if you're in the rooms, you've got hope, and life happens, bad stuff happens, but you can come here, you can share it, and there's always a chance. So I'm just going to leave it there, but thanks.